So we're jumping into Parsha Chayei Sarah. A lot of work went into particularly these Chayei Sarah Shirim, some more than even the previous Chumash ones. There are some ideas that, as always, I'm using from my Rabbi Rav Amos. Most of it's built on his stuff. Almost all of the stuff in the Shirim is built on Rav Amos' Torah's presentation of Chumash, though there are some new things here that I'm still working out in my head, I'm still working on. So definitely jump in if something's unclear or if you feel that something is incorrect or needs work. To start off, let's break up Chayei Sarah into its major components, so like we do with most Parshiyot. Let's put Chayei Sarah up front. What are the major components of the Parsha of Chayei Sarah? We have what we'll call for now, let's call it the death of Sarah. Let me come back to that. Good. Component number two, which is the bulk of the Parsha. That's all happening in here, but we're already feeling a tension between the fact that although it's called Chayei Sarah, the whole parsha is called Chayei Sarah, and that's how the paragraph opens, the emphasis here seems to be on the purchase of Ma'arat HaMachpelah. Okay, good. What's the second component? No hands, just go for it.
Finding a way for you.
Good. Shidduch for Yitzchak. Excellent. Third component. Is what? Great.
Oh, finding Rivka, not
what's that part of number two? Finding a Shidduch for Yitzchak, yeah, that is Rivka. Don't, spoilers for anybody who didn't read the Parsha yet. That's Rivka. So we've got the end of the life of Abraham, which has a couple of components to it, but as you pointed out, the death of Abraham. And then part number four is
Yishmael.
The death of Yishmael. Okay, and as always, we have to figure out kind of what's happening with the overall structure of the Parsha of Chayei Sarah. What binds or unites these four parts together? The death of Sarah and the purchase of Ma'arat HaMachpelah, finding a Shidduch for Yitzchak in Rivka, the death of Abraham and the death of Yishmael, and how that all fits under the banner of Chayei Sarah. That being the case, what are some immediate questions which arise from... No, hold on. There you go. What are some immediate questions which arise from the name, the structure, and how all this fits together? Yeah?
Why is it called Chayei Sarah if it's primarily about Yitzchak?
Good. How do we justify Chayei Sarah as the name of the Parsha if the bulk of the Parsha seems to be on finding a Shidduch for Yitzchak in Rivka?
Right, but...
Even more... What?
But isn't the case... I remember learning that then the titles of each parsha are just because of, like, one of the first words of...
Correct. As we discussed in our opening shiur last semester and this semester, the premise that we're working with is that a name indicates an essence. We talked about that also in the context of Shem Cham and Yefet and the shiur on Noach. We're going to be working with the presumption in this shiur that the name of the Parsha has to indicate the essence of the Parsha. Oh, okay. So yes, it does come from the first years, but you also notice that as you go through the Parshiot, sometimes it's the first couple of words, sometimes it's 5 and 6, sometimes it's 7 and 8, sometimes it's a couple, sometimes it's one, unclear. Meaning, there is a choice that's being made. Eile Toldot, you know, the Toldot in the next Parsha. So there are many Parshiot that open up with the word Toldot. Why is that one Parshiot Toldot as opposed to any other Parshiot? And those questions kind of arise. So we're going to assume that if it's called Chayei Sarah, at least in the context of this year, of the Shirim, that Chayei Sarah somehow defines the Parsha. Even more fundamental than Eliora's question. On a basic level. Throw them out, yeah?
Why is it called Chayei Sarah if Sarah died in this Parsha?
Excellent. It's called Chayei Sarah, but... it really opens with the death of Sarah. So if it's the death of Sarah, then why? It in fact seems to be the opposite of that. Chai Sarah is the life of Sarah. She dies immediately in the first pasuk of the sixth parsha, of the parsha that we're dealing with. Deeper than that, thinking structurally. Elior, you pointed out that the bulk of this whole piece is kind of on the shidduch, finding a shidduch for Yitzchak. Which means, where might you put the death of Sarah if the real bulk of the parsha is on finding shidduch for Yitzchak? The end of the parsha beforehand, at the end of parsha Vayira. Not only might you put it at the end of parsha Vayira, what in Chazal might even indicate that it belongs at the end of a Vayira? The death of Sarah. Oh, you're going back on it. Yeah, go, Elior, go for it. Right, Rashi brings it down to Chazal that the reason why Sarah dies is that she hears about Akedas Yitzchak. And when she hears that Yitzchak's going to be shechted, she dies. Bracha nishmata. So in fact, this seems at first glance to be the logical conclusion to Parshat Vayira. Go through Akedas Yitzchak, and then the conclusion of Akedas Yitzchak is the death of Sarah. Then start a Parsha about finding a shidduch for Yitzchak and Rivka. That makes a much more logical breakdown at first glance. So not only is it odd that it's called Chai Sarah when Sarah is very little of the bulk of the Parsha and it's not her life, but on top of that, why is Chai Sarah, why is that first paragraph, why is that not at the end of Vayira? Excellent. Any other questions on the structure? No? Good. Okay. So we're going to have to work slowly but surely to bind all of these pieces together. Today we're just really going to focus primarily on the first chunk of the parsha, which we already saw kind of a distinction within, which is the death of Sarah and the purchase of Maratza Machpelah, which is interesting that, again, that both of those names came up automatically. We have an inclination to call it the death of Sarah, because that is what happens at the very beginning of the Parsha. But if you look at the bulk of the Psukim at the beginning of the Parsha, in that first paragraph, almost all of the Psukim are really contained in, really dealing with, very specifically, the purchase of Maratza Machpelah. Does that make sense inside?
Yep.
Take a look back there. Okay, I'll be looking this up. Just get my notes. Sorry. There we go. All right, that looks still. So what's happening mostly in that first paragraph is, in fact, the work to acquire, to purchase Maratza Machpelah, which I think is an even more specific and clear definition of what's happening there. Right after the mention of the death of Sarah, we immediately go into Avram getting up and going and the constant back and forth between Avraham and Ephron about whether or not how to purchase Maratza Machpelah. The question then becomes, why does Abraham insist on purchasing Maratza Machpelah? Meaning, what's the importance of the nature of acquiring? What's the importance of the nature of acquiring Maratza Machpelah as opposed to seeing it as a gift? Question heightened by the fact that it's actually offered to Abraham as a gift. Ephron seemingly, at least at the beginning, wants to give it to him. In fact, all of B'nai Chet seem open to giving Avraham Marat Machpelah or any Achuzat Kever, any burial place within the entire land for free. And there's a consistent and definitive insistence by Avraham to specifically acquire, to make a kinyan, to acquire specifically Marat Machpelah. What were you going to say?
No, I'm...
Yeah.
That maybe, like, in the future generations, the Chitim will come back and they'll say that it's not really Avram's land because he didn't actually buy it. It's really their land in the first place.
Excellent. So actually, it's not the only place in Eretz Yisrael that we purchased. Just quickly, we're not going to go through it like we did at the very end of last semester. We'll come back to when we get to Shechem. But there are three places that are acquired in Eretz Yisrael. Only three places in Tanakh where we actually acquire a part of Eretz Yisrael. Those places are
Yerushalayim,
Hebron, which is Marat and Machpelah, and Shechem, which we just said, right?
These are all in Israel?
These are all in Israel, yes. Yerushalayim, Hebron, and Shechem. We'll talk about them more when we get to Shechem. But these are the places which are explicitly, we go out of our way to purchase Hebron in this parsha, Shechem in a couple of parshiot, and Yerushalayim at the end of Shmuel Bet. David HaMelech purchases Shechem. They're the only places which we actually go, and we need to make a point of acquiring in Eretz Yisrael. Why these two places? What makes them unique? We'll come back to that slowly but surely when we get to Shechem, which is going to be our kind of last piece in that puzzle. Here we go. Now we're up. Sorry for the choppiness. Once this comes up, we're good to go. Here is a technical difficulty by definition.
I know there was Wi-Fi down here.
Okay. So in terms of what you said, that's actually brought up in a Medrash, which we'll come back to also when we talk about Shechem. But the Medrash itself, in Bereishis Rabbah, on Vayishlach, Ayin Tet Zayin, actually says explicitly that Zechad Mishlami Komot Sheinu Mot Alam Yicholim Lehonot Me Et Yisrael Lomar Gozlim Hein Viachem Veiluhein. Meaning, then it lists all three of them and goes through where they're acquired from. There seems to be that these three places are more likely to be argued about more than any other place in Eretz Yisrael. So we need to purchase them. And when we do purchase them, we need to be able to hold on to that shtar, because should we not, the other nations will fight with us. Which, by the way, plays out exactly as Manazeth. These are probably the most hot-button places in all of Israel, which are most disputed and most fought about whether or not they belong to us or not. Yerushalayim all the time. Shechem and Hebron. I mean, these are places where we're fighting with B'nai Ishmael in terms of whether or not they belong to us or they belong to them. So that's actually played out historically. Yeah.
But what?
Yeah.
Sorry, I just totally spoke.
No, you go.
Somebody go.
Are we fighting with B'nai Ishmael or not? Like, what claim could B'nai Ishmael have over them? Shouldn't we be fighting with, like, the Canaanites or...
No, the point is we would have to have that these are things that we need a star to prove that we own them.
I know, but I'm saying, wouldn't we be fighting over people who, like, Ephron and the Chitim or whoever previously owned it, not B'nai Ishmael?
And yet... My point is that the most disputed lands within Eretz Yisrael, regardless of who we're arguing about them with.
Yeah. What's considered Shechem nowadays?
Shechem.
Yeah.
But we can't go there, right?
It's... What is it? It's where Yosef's buried. We can't go, really.
Can we tell the name that they call it?
They have a different name for it?
I think so.
Is that where they have the sign that says you can't enter?
Probably.
I mean, they're the hard places to get to. We'll come back to those two places at a later point.
Rabbi,
yes.
Who said that?
That those three specific places. Yes. That's Bereishit Rabbah, Parshat Vayishlach, Ayin Tet Zayin. Okay. But we'll have that on a source sheet when we get to the Parshat that deals with Shechem. Tov. Okay. Yeah, we'll come back to all of that stuff. Let's go back to acquisition. Let's focus on acquisition, and then let's get into things now that we're really settled again. I apologize. Okay. The purchase of Hebron, the focus here we said was a focus on purchasing Marat HaMachpelah. And the purchase of Hebron is actually the first purchase, the first act of acquisition in the entirety of the Torah. If the topic of our discussion is acquisitions or kinyanim, we did this at the very end of last semester, we're going to take it to new places. What is the very, what?
Marriage.
We'll get there. What is the very first, what is the primary masechet in Shas that deals with kinyanim? Good. On a Torah level, we're dealing with the purchase of Maharat Hamach Pelah, and the primary kinyan on, in Torah, that's Torah Shebechtav, in Gemara, or Torah Sheba'al Peh, is going to be Masechet Kiddushin. What is Kiddushin?
Marriage.
Masechet Kiddushin deals with the concept of marriage, of Kiddushin, but while it deals with Kiddushin, it actually talks about all of kinyanim in general. It starts off with kiddushin, it goes to abadim, behemot, kinyan karkaot, all of these types of things. Now, while there's a, in the Gemara, while in, very often in Gemara, what will happen is we'll go from one topic to the next, seemingly at random, although very much not. Meaning, there's a whole understanding of how the Gemara goes from one piece to another. Even though they may look like it's a stream of consciousness, may look like they're unrelated topics, they're of course very, very related, and there's a lot of intentionality in how that's built. That's something that Mishnayot don't do. Mishnayot don't say one thing and then list a whole bunch of things that are related to that thing. And yet in Masechet Kiddushin, on a Mishnayot level, we go through all forms of Kinyanim in Masechet Kiddushin, following the Kinyan of Kiddushin. What that implies is that all kinyanim are drawing from the kinyan of Kiddushin, which is the kinyan of a man, by the kinyan made by a man on a woman in the context of marriage. The kinyan of Isha is the prime kinyan. How does the Gemara identify or know that there needs to be a kinyan, an act of acquisition made by a man on a woman in the process of marriage? Excellent. That's actually the exact lashon of the Gemara. It says, Gemar, kicha kicha misteyafron. It makes a gezeira shava. Gezeira shava means when it sees two words in a biblical text that are similar to one another, we can learn out one thing to another. It says in our parsha, in Perek Chaf Gimel Pasuk Yud, in the small parsha that we're talking about, Ach im ata lu shema'ini natati kesef asadeh kach mimeni vehbarat nitishama. Avram tells Ephron, take my money and I will bury my dead in your land. But allow me to acquire it. Acquire it through giving you the money that I want to give you. There needs to be an acquisition. From that, the word kach exists also by the acquisition of, whatever act that means, we'll come back to that in a moment, whatever it means in the acquisition of marriage of a man to a woman, which is ki kach ish isha. When a man acquires a woman through the process of kiddushin or marriage.
Can you repeat this quote?
Kicha kicha miste Ephron. It means, it says, we learn out from Gezeira Shava the requirement of an acquisition by a man to a woman in the process of marriage, by the fact that it uses the term of kicha by stay Ephron, by the purchase of Marat HaMachpelah in the field of Ephron, and the fact that it uses the word kicha by a marriage in ki ikach ish isha. It's called Gezeira Shava. The idea is that both have to be an act of acquisition. The first part of what a marriage has to be, the foundation or the baseline of a marriage, there's multiple parts to a marriage. There's kiddushin, and then there's nisuin. Kiddushin is the actual acquisition phase. Nisuin is the bringing into, one's rishus, one's house. Right? That happens either through the chuppah, the yichud room, or bringing into the house itself. Dancing music on, we're getting married, right? Getting into the house itself. The first floor of marriage, though, has to be an act of kinyan, and it's learned from here. But what that means is is that the first kinyan that's described in Masechet Kiddushin, which we're claiming, if it's the first kinyan in Masechet Kiddushin, and Kiddushin is the source of all kinyanim on a Torah Sheba'al Peh level, the source of all kinyanim on a Torah Sheba'al Peh level is Kiddushin, where is that being learned from?
Yitzhak getting married.
No. Hikakikam Yisteya from.
Oh, from buying.
It's the purchase of Maratha Machpelah. That's the connection that's being made. Kiddushin, which is marriage, which is the primary kinyan on a Torah Sheba'al Peh level, is being learned from the primary kiddushin on a Torah Shebichtav level, which is Maratha Machpelah. The purchase of Maratha Machpelah. The Gemara itself, immediately on the first Amud of Masechet Kiddushin, makes a linkage between the two. Between our purchase of Maratha Machpelah and the central purchase or the central acquisition that happens in Kiddushin on a Torah Sheba'al Peh level.
Wait, I don't understand. You're saying in Torah Sheba'al Peh, that's when we learn like the process of the acquisition? That's the only like way that we know how to acquire things?
Let's get rid of the notes and try to speak clearer. Okay. Yeah. On a Torah level, the primary acquisition, the paradigm of acquisition, the first time we see it on a Daraisa level, that's happening in the purchase of Maratha Machpelah. That makes it, on a Torah Shebichtav level, the origin of Kinyanim. If you want to understand what Kinyanim are, and we go to the first place in Torah, we're going to go to the purchase of Maratha Machpelah. That's what I was defining, essentially, on a Torah Shebichtav level, what is a Kinyan? Similarly, we could ask the question on a Torah Sheba'al Peh level. What Masechet most embodies Kinyan more than any other Masechet? It's not even a question, it's Masechet Kiddushin. On Torah Sheba'al Peh level, Kiddushin is the paradigmatic and the source of all Kinyanim. Not only is that the case that those two are separate, but the first Amud of Masechet Kiddushin makes a connection between the De'oraisa Kinyan, the paradigmatic De'oraisa Kinyan, and the paradigmatic Kinyan that exists in Torah Sheba'al Peh. Through this Gezeira Shava. It makes a connection between Kiddushin and Maratha Machpelah. In terms of what that does for us on a most basic level, is it starts to put all of, or the beginning of, Chayisara into context. What's happening in Chayisara? The first piece is the Kinyan of Maratha Machpelah. The second one is what? The Kinyan of Rivka, the first Shidduch, really, in all of Chumash. Meaning what's happening in Chayisara seems to be an emphasis on Kinyanim. Kinyanim seem to be what are drawing all parts of the Parsha together. The first being the purchase of Maratha Machpelah, the second being the Kinyan of Yitzchak to Rivka, a Kinyan of Kiddushin between Yitzchak and Rivka. We clear up until there. Questions? Thoughts? Comments? Is that clearer? Rebecca? Yeah. Question is, what's the content of what it means to make a kinyan? What's the content? So let's think about what's actually happening. When a person makes a kinyan, a person is giving of themselves, giving something they own, giving a piece of themselves, in order to make that thing theirs. When Avraham Avinu wants Maratha Machpelah, he goes and says, I refuse to accept it as a gift. The way that I need to acquire it is I need to acquire it fully, and the only way to make it truly mine, to make it truly connected to me, is if I give money, or I give of myself, in order to connect myself and that land. Similarly, by Kiddushin, the only way for a man to really make a connection to his wife, the only way for a man to truly become bonded to a woman, is for there to be an act of kinyan, for the man to give of himself to her, and by giving of himself to her, the two become bound together. Before they can physically connect, before they can come under the same chuppah, before they can go into a cheder yichud, before she can come into his house, before the two can become one, for the two to be in the possibility of having that type of relationship, what sets the groundwork, what sets the framework for that relationship to happen is the giving of one's self over, and that sort of opens up the possibility for there truly to be a relationship there. For there truly to be a relationship between us and Eretz Yisrael, or Marat HaMachpelah, or for there to be a true relationship between a husband and a wife, between Yitzhak and Rivka. But a kinyan seems to be related to the giving of oneself. Tov. Questions? Taking it one step further. This is my own piece, and why I'm a little bit disjointed is because I've been really trying desperately, literally all day. I came right from my home and working for the last few hours trying to pull the pieces together, clearly not well enough. Still working on it in my head. What troubled me was I couldn't kind of put together exactly why Ma'arat HaMachpelah and the Shidduch for Yitzchak, those are the primary kinyanim. In what way, so fine, whenever I buy anything, then I'm giving of myself to that thing and making that thing mine and making it shayach, making it relevant to me. But what makes these paradigmatic? What makes the purchase of Ma'arat HaMachpelah, and what makes the purchase of, again, not to use the term purchase literally here, which is why we're kind of bumping it up a notch, the kinyan of an Isha, the kinyan of Yitzchak to Rivka, what makes these paradigmatic kinyanim? Here's what I suspect. What's happening in Ma'arat HaMachpelah? Ma'arat HaMachpelah is the first purchase. We pointed out before that there were three places that are bought in Eretz Yisrael, but this is the first one that needs to be purchased. It's not just that we're purchasing Chevron. We're purchasing Ma'arat HaMachpelah. What is Ma'arat HaMachpelah? A word that comes up, got to be 15 times in the first Parshia. It's not just Ma'arat HaMachpelah. It's for a very specific purpose. What is Abraham buying?
A burial.
An Achuzat Kever. He's buying a place of burial. So it's not just purchasing the land of Israel. It's not just purchasing Chevron. It's not just purchasing Ma'arat HaMachpelah. It's purchasing a Kever. Why would there be such an emphasis in the first, the paradigmatic kinyan on a Doraita level? Why would there be such an emphasis on purchasing a burial place? Why do I have to give of myself so much to buy something which is the end of my life? My life is already over. Think for a second. I'm hoping if somebody else thinks of it also that I'll know that I'm totally not alone in this. Yeah, Marissa.
Is it considered like the biggest kind of chesed to do something for someone who died? So...
good. There's definitely an aspect of chesed involved here, and I think that would link to Sarah, Abraham, that totally fits the paradigm of chesed underlining a lot of things that are happening here also. Yes.
Okay.
Anything else? Meaning, I think that what you're saying is 100% true, and I think it links to a lot of other things. I'm wondering if there is another floor.
I think by purchasing it, he's like making a statement that like Olam Haba really exists and there's more to life than just burying.
That's what I suspect as well. That the most important kinyan that a person makes in life is not any purchase that he or she makes in this world. The most important kinyan that we make is the kinyan that we make on Olam Haba. The effort that we put in Olam Hazeh, the parts of ourselves that we give up on Olam Hazeh, the giving it our all in Olam Hazeh to earn Olam Haba. The kever not as a kever, which I think I saw one of the Mefarshim talk about. I didn't double check this in the text. I saw it as toward the end of when I was looking into things. That the term kever in the dialogue is always used by the Bnei Chait, and Abraham always emphasizes, no, not a kever, an achuzat kever. Something to grab onto, something to hold onto, some eternal aspect of the kever, which is why I also think that Abraham emphasizes the word vayakam, that there's a kiyum to this kinyan, because it's an eternal kinyan. That the most important kinyan that we make in Olam Hazeh is our kinyan on Olam Haba. And we're giving everything we have in Olam Hazeh in order to earn Olam Haba. And that's why, that links back to a pasuk, which is going to underlie everything that we're talking about as well, why there needs to be a purchase, which is from Mishlei, which is Soneh Matanot Yichyeh. One who hates gifts will truly live. Where will they truly live? In Olam Haba. One who hates being given things as a gift, meaning Avram says, I don't want Olam Haba. I don't want the burial place. I don't want it to be a gift. It's something I need to put into. And, Marissa, going back to your point, I need to put into for my wife, which is an act of chesed as well. So there's definitely chesed underlying it. But in order for this to really be mine, in order for this to be real, I can't be given it as a gift. Only what I purchase is truly mine. Only what I purchase is truly alive. Only what I give of myself of is real. And if I don't give of myself for it, it's not real, it's not living, and it won't stay with me eternally. I also think that that's underlying the reason for the name of the actual burial place. What's the name of the actual burial place? What does that mean? What is Machpelah? Kaful. What does Kaful mean?
Doubled.
Rashi points out. It's got a top and a bottom. He's specifically buying a cave that has two floors. A lower floor and an upper floor. He's purchasing a burial place that implies that there is this world, but as you said, that also is implying that there's something above and beyond. There's a second floor. It's Marata Machpelah. There are two floors to it. And that's where he's purchasing specifically a burial place and making an intent of purchasing it and showing that it needs to be bought, it needs to be given to. Now let's come back to the Kinyan of an Isha. When a husband makes a kinyan, when a man makes a kinyan on a woman, what's happening there also? He's giving of himself to her. When we talk about Olam Haba, what's the goal? We've talked about this in other shiurim. When a person is working and working and working and working to achieve Olam Haba, what does a person achieve when they get to Olam Haba? What do we receive in Olam Haba?
According to Mesillat Yesharim?
Yes.
Closeness.
Kashem. Ultimate reward, which is definitionally closeness to God. So when we're saying that we're working to earn Olam Haba, and that we need to earn it, what are we really saying that we're trying to earn, that we're giving of ourselves to earn?
Closeness to God. A relationship
with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's the paradigm for the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Olam Hazeh?
Relationship with the spouse.
And Rashi, in fact, says that one of the reasons why it's called Ma'arat Machpelah, or it's in Kiryat Arba, I have to double check with Rashi. This is in Pasuk Tep, and I have Rashi on it right now. Is he says that it's called. Let me check quickly if I have it here. I'll have it free for Wednesday. He says that it's because there were four zugot that are in. It must be on Kiryat Arba. There are four zugot. There are four pairs that are buried in Ma'arat HaMachpelah. Meaning Ma'arat HaMachpelah becomes this place that's both doubled because it's Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, but it's also double in that only pairs of people, only zugot, only husbands and wives are buried in Ma'arat Machpelah. Adam and Chava, Avram and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, and Yaakov and Leah. Only pairs are buried there, implying the importance of Kiddushin even in Ma'arat Machpelah. Even in that doubling and the coupling that's implied by Ma'arat Machpelah. Because the goal is, the most important way, and this is what I think really links the two together and really gets to the essence of a kinyan, as not just a purchase. If we're saying that the heart and soul of what a kinyan is, and this is a kol b'derech ha'ashar again, I've been working on this today, it doesn't mean it's true, it's work in progress. The essence of a kinyan is giving of myself, not just giving of myself to truly make a bond with something else, but the giving of myself to another. That's the key kinyan. It's the only kinyan that's eternal. Nothing that we buy in this world with our money is going to last. So nematanot yichyeh, nothing is going to live with us past this world that we purchase even. The only thing that lasts with us forever are the investments in the relationships that we make. Or the chasadim that we do. Again, I'm not distancing from that. I just think that we're going to have to draw that out more throughout the parsha. The connections that we make, and the two paradigmatic ones which are implied by both a Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebal Peh level, are the one with God in Ma'arat HaMachpelah, by buying our place in the world to come, or by giving to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and by purchasing, so to speak, our spouse, which is giving of oneself and building the relationship or the foundation for relationship between husband and wife, which is the paradigm for the relationship they have with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now, one of the things that bothered me, and appreciate that nobody attacked me yet, is that we keep using the concept of purchasing a wife.
Oh, it's bothering me.
I didn't see this written anywhere either, nor do I have enough sources to back it up. But my goal here is to critically analyze the text with you and see what emerges from the text. The canon of Kiddushin is learned from where?
Maratamach
Pelah. What's the exact pasuk? What's the exact pasuk? It was bothering me until I realized that it might be a light bulb in terms of explaining how the relationship works. It's pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayidaber el Ephron beozney am haaretz limor. Meaning Ephron refused to take the money, and Avram says, Ach imatalu shveni, please listen to me. Natati kesef hasadeh kachmeni, please. What is he saying? Please take the money from me. Ve'ekbarat miti shama. Is it the kicha kicha miste Ephron, the primary kinyan, and the pasuk that we're learning from, which definitionally teaches us that a husband needs to acquire a wife? How is the nature of the language phrased in the pasuk? What?
Please.
It's a request. It's not a definition of something that happened in the past. It's not something that you can just do. It's a give and take relationship, and it's a relationship that needs to be engaged by the other. The primary kinyan, and even the pasuk, the very wording of the pasuk, which is where we're learning out from, the need for there to be the foundation of relationship being giving of oneself, also requires the other to want to receive. So while the two may have distinctly different roles, which that I'll stand by and we can talk about in another context, of giver and receiver, each one being meaningless without the other, in Kabbalistic terms a mashpia and a mekabel, both need to be willing and active participants in the process. To the point where, if Ephron says, no, I will only give it to you as a gift, Abraham can't buy it. And the paradigm for even a kinyan isha is being learned from a pasuk, which is a plea. Which is, in my mind, exactly the nature of what a marriage is supposed to be about. Even on a level of kiddushin. Which is the perspective of, I want to give to you for the rest of my life. Do you accept? And the wife, hopefully, responding in turn. So while a kinyan is there, and one needs to be the mashpia, and one needs to be the mikabel, or the mikabelot in this case, I think it is intentionally learned from a pasuk that's a plea and a request, and not a definition of something that happened passively to the other. Questions or thoughts? Yes?
When you said about like what the word kaf like means, or like that, can you explain like that again? Like, weren't you like saying something about kaf, the word?
The way that it's used in the pasuk is please take it. Please take the money so that I can acquire it. Kach mimeni. Take it from me. Take the money. But he's asking, he's not saying. It's not a pasuk which says, and Ephron took the money, therefore, just like Ephron took the money, somebody takes the money, and the woman is acquired, past tense, passive. It's asking, it's begging, it's a request. The last thing that I'll emphasize, which is a relatively well-known concept, and with this we'll close for today, that we see that concept come full circle, and we'll have to bring these two pieces much closer together, which we'll start to do probably next Monday. We have a different piece to do on Wednesday. By the end of the Shidduch V'Yitzchak, if you look at the very end of the part of the second section, in Perek Chavdal Pasuk Samech Zayin, when Yitzchak finally takes Rivka into his house, Vayivieha Yitzchak Ahohela Sara Imo, Vayikach et Rivka. He's first kach et Rivka, v'atilo l'isha v'ye'ehaveha, v'yinachim yitzak acharei imo. Meaning the concept here, the way that it's often discussed, is that the love that truly comes between any two people comes after the marriage begins with a lifetime of giving. So there is a kicha there, a v'yikach et Rivka. The v'ye'ehaveha only comes afterward. The relatively well-known concept is that ahava is actually, what's at the root of the word ahava? ha, which means
to give.
Meaning the kicha is the initial giving that's done, that's meant to set the stage for a lifetime of giving by the husband to the wife. And in response, an act of receiving by the wife of the husband, and it's only also the giving of the wife to the husband. But that only happens after that initial kicha that I think again pops up at the end of the parsha. And then there's the ahava that grows by the continued giving on both sides and the building of the relationship, which is the whole purpose of a kinyan in the first place. Yeah, Tzibi.
Do any Haredi people use that as a source for, like, why they go on, like,
yes.
10 dates? And
then... 10 dates. 10 dates is when things are really bad, 2 or 3, but yeah.
Being generous.
They would say, you're building a shaky relationship. But yes. Yes. Cool. Any final questions on this piece? We can talk about it more afterward also. I'm going to try to develop, I think also this is also new material and stuff that I haven't heard from Arabi specifically, something which we haven't touched upon yet, and because different shiurim are for different audiences, I suspect, I have never heard Arabi explicitly talk about the idea of why are there 4 imahot. I think in this context that would be particularly relevant. And I do think that it's also linked to the fact that Arba is one of the few numbers that is repeated consistently throughout the initial Parshia in part 1. I'm going to try to pull enough of it together that I feel confident going forward with that for Wednesday. And then next Monday we'll start to tie the whole Parsha together in terms of, good, now we know that the whole Parsha is linked under the topic of Kinyan. And I think that we're going to come back and verse. I think that Chesed is also a big piece here, the conclusion of the story of Chesed. But that will either do either Wednesday if I don't feel I have it tight enough, or we'll do that on Monday. Okay? Good? 1 minute break, and then let's do...
You know where that doesn't work?